Podcast. My name is Phil, and joining me as always is Rohan. Good morning, how's it going?
Good morning, good thanks, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. And joining us today is a fellow Aussie from Sydney, is Jared.
Hey guys, how are you?
Good, thank you. So Jared, we're going to get to all your awesome stuff that you've got happening in your Home Assistant config soon. But first, we're going to talk about the latest Home Assistant release, which is 0.73.
Yeah, there's a bunch of new stuff, mostly around Lovelace. We're not going to go too deep into every little change in the Lovelace. But the big change, there's a new iframe card. So that's pretty interesting. I actually didn't realize that wasn't there in Lovelace. I thought that was there already, but...
Well, see, I first saw when Lovelace came out, I saw the history card.
Mm-hmm.
Was there, and I thought, oh, I've always wondered how people do that. I had no idea it was actually a component that you could just add into your UI. But the iframe one that they've just added into Lovelace will be good if you want to put in like a Grafana stat or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, or a lot of other things, like I know some people want to do like Node-RED in an iframe or something like that too, right? So,
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
There's also the ability now to set Lovelace as your default UI. So, if you want to, instead of having to always navigate to /Lovelace, you can now just have that as your default when you open up Home Assistant. So
I'm looking forward to enabling that.
Yeah, right. Have you been using Lovelace much, Jared?
Look, I only went to 7.2 yesterday morning. So, yeah, got my first play with it. I'd already pulled apart all my groups recently to redo all my display anyway. So I was happy to have not finished or really got started on that. So, yeah, redoing everything in Lovelace at the moment. You can see the start of it in my GitHub. But
yeah, that's awesome.
Cool.
Actually, last week's guest, Otto, came out with a script to automatically convert your Home Assistant config into the Lovelace YAML. So if you're interested in that, there'll be links in the show notes for that as well. And another friend of the podcast, Dale, has also created a similar script written in Python, but that also supports packages. So if your Home Assistant config is split up into packages and you want to convert it easily over to Lovelace YAML, there's another script that you can run as well.
Yeah.
What else do we have? Oh, I see first starting of the new authentication system for Home Assistant's being worked on as well. Polis as well started doing some great work on that.
Yeah, so as it turns out, Polis and AwareCAN, basically they said, okay, you know what, for 0.73, let's try and make a actual, like let's make something working, right? Rather than just conceptual or design or something like that. So they sprinted for it. So right now, it's CLI based, right? Only so even if you want to test it or play around with it, it's not something that you can integrate into the UI or anything right now. But it's CLI based, so they're just trying to get that prototype working. It doesn't have a UI, like I said, and there's no HAS.io support in it yet either. So hopefully, we'll actually be seeing something like that soon coming out in the next couple of releases. That's my hope.
Yeah, well, I think getting the first one done, you know, laying the groundwork done, getting a good example out there, and then letting other people come in and start creating this, because this is going to be a really big change for Home Assistant. You know, right now, the only way to secure Home Assistant is with that API password or your frontend password. So having username and passwords and multi-factor authentication, this is going to be a big step for Home Assistant. So it's better that they do this properly and do it slowly.
Yeah, exactly.
It's certainly not a simple solve either, especially when you look at the effects of automations and who should have permission to trigger what automations and how deep down in the cycle that could go. It is not just a case of like, could this person run this? It's a much more complex model. So I'm glad too that they're taking the time to really think it through and implement it well.
And there's also a lot of, you know, satellite services as well. You know, you've got, you know, floor plan, you've got AppDaemon and Node-RED. All these things are going to have to be upgraded to use different kinds of authentication. So better to slowly do it and get everything moving in the right direction than all of a sudden just flicking the switch and having all these other services stop working.
Yeah, exactly. So you need to, again, there needs to be a viable mechanism, right? Where it doesn't break everybody's everything before people can log in and use it. But no, huge shout out to the team for starting to build that out. So
yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
There's also support for HomeKit controller climate devices. So now you can get your HomeKit thermostats and air conditioners working with Home Assistant. So more great work on HomeKit going along there. So well done to the team there as well.
Yeah, and the ratio, or ratio sprinkler system, there's a little better webhook support now. So rather than, I guess what was happening was it was essentially hitting the server every few seconds, and the company had to essentially put a rate limiter on the API calls.
Oh, no.
I guess it's they couldn't scale with that. Now, basically, this uses webhooks so that you get instant updates with a couple of API calls, and that's it.
That will actually take a little load off Home Assistant as well. Instead of having to constantly poll, it can just wait for it to be told what's happened.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of a win-win there. So
yeah, some breaking changes in this release. The Pi-hole sensor, which is actually a pretty popular sensor that people are using to integrate with Home Assistant, is now only going to be showing by default the ads blocked for today. So it will no longer show you all the available data. But if you need that, you can go and just use the monitored underscore conditions for the sensors that you want to pull into Home Assistant. Once again, just limiting what Home Assistant's pulling down, make it a little bit snappier for Home Assistant. Instead of grabbing everything, just get what Home Assistant needs. So another good move there.
Yeah, exactly. The PostNL, basically they updated PostNL to have the same unit of measure to align with UPS. That's the Netherlands postal service that's out there. Again, it's just around building more consistency and stuff. So now, so it was interesting because I was like, well, what's the unit of measure for postage? So it's just a number of packages, I guess. Now they've standardized on packages rather than UPS, which used packages, and PostNL, I believe, used package. So the singular versus the plural. So yeah, they're kind of standardizing on a lot of that stuff. So so if you do use the PostNL sensor, you will experience a breaking change.
That's cool. I appreciate that, you know, I mean, there's maybe just these two platforms that were affected, but it's good to get, you know, a standard out early so then next week, if another developer comes along and develops a mail add-on for Home Assistant, there's already a standard in place to...
Yeah, exactly. Things.
Yeah. And Poland.com is now being moved to asynchronous calls, so you might have to update your config there if you're using that sensor, which is a pretty popular one as well, I believe.
Yeah. And then another popular one is from a Prometheus perspective. So if you're not sure what Prometheus is, it's essentially part of that whole monitoring suite that people put together. So they've added namespace for those metrics as well. So you can tag that and go on with it. So
okay, cool. So you might if you're monitoring multiple services, you could prefix it with a namespace, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I believe that's what the idea is. It's been a bit since I've used Prometheus, but actually mine at home is right now is broken, and it has been for awesome. About 6 months, and I've just not bothered fixing it. I should do that at some point, but. Yeah.
There's also been a fix for Z-Wave climate operation mode mappings. So if you have a Z-Wave climate controller, you might want to just take a look on the breaking changes first just to see if there's anything you need to update there.
Yeah. Here's one of the things that actually affects me. So anybody who's enabled the use of X-forwarded 4 in a proxy setting. So this is, again, if you're using a reverse proxy or something similar like that, you'll actually need to explicitly whitelist a proxy using the new trusted underscore proxies setting about that. So have a look through the release notes for that and use it accordingly.
Okay, cool. I'm guessing that's also in response to a few of the security concerns that came out over the past couple of weeks. So if you are using any forwarded IP settings, I would please go and check that and read that very thoroughly.
Yeah.
Home Assistant has also deprecated the use of TLS for SSL version 1 and version 1 underscore 1 support. So if you're using those TLS sort of certificates and SSL certificates, they will be dropped in this version of Home Assistant. So just watch out for that. You shouldn't be using them anyway, but just watch out for that.
Yeah, exactly. If you're using any sort of modern browser, I believe TLS 1 and 1.1 are mostly deprecated anyways, so...
Yeah, exactly. And some noteworthy changes coming in this week. Jared, actually, this one might apply to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're using any custom components, these are now going to add warnings to your Home Assistant log files.
Right.
Nothing's being deprecated. Nothing's being changed. But unfortunately, there's been a few instances of custom components causing some issues with users, and they're reporting bugs to Home Assistant, which aren't the fault of the core code. So just be mindful that your logs, if you are using custom components, your logs are going to have little warnings in there to say you are using that component.
Yeah, Well, I've to date gotten into the habit of making sure my custom components, especially when they're versions of core that I've needed to tweak, have got a very different name, so that generally new underscore their component name. I use a modification to GeoRSS to make sure I get events published, and I use just a couple other custom components. So that's really good to know, because I actually have fairly verbose logging on most of the time, so I probably get lost in the noise anyway, but good to know for when I tune that back down. Yeah,
exactly. If anyone's thinking, oh, hang on, why is this component giving me warnings in my logs now? It's not nothing wrong. It's just a warning to say this component has been loaded. Did you want it to be loaded? Just be aware.
Yeah, which is good, right? It's you start avoiding a lot more kind of support issues and such as well at that point. Going, why is this acting weird? Well, yeah, it might be that custom component, right? So also running apps that are on Fire TV, if you've got those, they're now displayed in Home Assistant. So that's kind of cool.
I appreciate that feature for my Rokus. I can see what app is running
on
my Roku Media Player. So, you know, I can see if Netflix is running, do this. If Plex is running, do that. So it's cool that that's actually supported on Fire TV too.
Are there any automations that you would do with that?
Yes. So when the Roku is running, I can see what apps it's using. So when Plex is running, I can then tailor my automations based on what the Plex component is doing. So I can see when Plex is paused, if it's playing or stopped. So I know, okay, if Plex is the app running and Plex is playing, don't send any notifications or dim the lights if it's a movie playing.
Right, right, right.
But then if Netflix is open, I still don't do any notifications, but I wait until that app is closed. I can't tell if Netflix is playing or pause, unfortunately, but at least it's a way to, you know, sort of not interrupt. Because I have a Sonos play bar, I don't want the TV cutting out to have an announcement that the dishwasher's done. So,
right.
Trust me from experience, you don't want that to happen.
Yeah, I've spent much time working around that situation as well.
that sounds like a very specific use case here.
Also, a final reminder, if you're using the Google Maps platform, it's now time to get out that credit card and put it behind your Google Maps account or your Google Developers account, because you will be shut off on July 16th. If you don't. So if you're using the Google Travel Time component, that applies to you.
Is that for the Maps integration as well? For the sharing?
No. So I don't think it's for the sharing as well. I think the sharing, basically you set up as another user of the, your location with another user. This is more if you're making API calls to Google. And also, I think something that needs to be mentioned this week, bad timing, maybe with Lovelace, but on the community forums, another UI for Home Assistant's been released called Tileboard. Alexei Ivanov in London has come up with this. It looks like it's an Angular JS-based front end. And the best way I can describe it is it looks like the Windows 10 start menu with some nice cards and tiles. So if you're looking for another front end Home Assistant and maybe Lovelace isn't there for you, I would please check out Tileboard. That looks like another great add-on as well.
Jared, now this is kind of where we get to grill you a little bit and see what you're up to.
Always something different every day, just about. mostly it's trying to get some sort of balance between usability and livability with automation. And that's mostly in the form of making sure it's girlfriend usable.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay. So how long have you been using Home Assistant for?
I started playing with Home Assistant, it would have been November last year, so it would have been about October when I first picked up a Google Home, and that's what started the whole journey.
Okay, yep. So fairly new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm a Python developer by trade, I'm also a sysadmin, so Home Assistant was a natural fit in that whole ecosystem. I had a look at OpenHAB and all the other ones out there. I didn't want to go to Java, I didn't want to go to any other hideous solution. Python was somewhere I was comfortable, and Home Assistant had a great community behind it, so that's why I picked Home Assistant.
Good choice.
Right. So did you actually install and play with any of those other ones, or did you just go straight to Home Assistant?
None of the Java ones. I've spent many years just maintaining JVMs for a living in server farms. I don't want to run Java at home. I didn't really play with any. Home Assistant was one of the very early ones I started playing with. I did have a bit of a tinker with Ift and a few of the other kind of things that could do a bit more than just out of the box, but nothing made me happy until I found and started playing with Home Assistant.
That's great. So how are you running it today? Is it on a Pi or Docker? Or
yeah,
are you
doing IO? It's actually on my router gateway box, which happens to be a Nook running Ubuntu 18.04.
Cool.
So it's kind of the main house box. It's also got a 4-disk JBOD attached to it, just USB with a bunch of old media archives and video archives. I do a bit of video editing and audio editing. So it's got my media archives and all those kind of things on it as well. It's kind of it's designed for a 1-bedroom apartment. It's a Nook with a 4-disk JBOD on a bookshelf, basically.
That's cool. So you said you're using that as your gateway as well. So you're running like pfSense or something on it, or
Just raw IP tables. I've been a sysadmin for 21 years. IP tables is my friend.
Perfect. Okay, that's hardcore, man.
You don't need any of these new fancy tools. You just do it the old school way.
Huh? That's pretty much it for that stuff. Yeah. So I also run Mosquito internally, and I do a lot of ESP based or Arduino based DIY projects as well. So they all pretty much hang off the Mosquito MQTT broker. And that gets everything in and out of Home Assistant, and that includes RFID swipe in and out, some fish tank monitoring and other bits and pieces around the house. Yeah,
that's awesome. I've just been browsing your GitHub repo, and you've got a lot in there. What would you say your favorite automation is? What's something that you're really proud of?
Look, the fun one for me at the moment is actually the bathroom, because it still needs some tinkering. It's not perfect yet. So in the bathroom, I have it's a Yeelight light bulb. There is one of the Xiaomi Aquara temperature and humidity sensors, motion detection, and that's it at the moment. Yeah, and on a button on the door on the way in. So another Xiaomi Aquara, just a Zigbee button, which I love. But for the bathroom, it's a press the button on the doorway on the way in to turn light on or off toggle, or motion detect on the way in. And it's been getting the motion detect to work while someone in the shower has been the pump it lately.
Yeah, so the bathroom is something I have always personally considered off limits. I think, you know, other people of my home sort of put up with the home automation to an extent. You know, maybe the kitchen lights don't work there, maybe the living room lights don't work now and then. But I think, you know, if someone's in the shower or having a bath and the lights don't come on, or the lights just turn off when you're left in the dark while you've got running water, I don't think I could justify that. So the bathroom's been one that I've sort of steered clear of. So kudos to you for having the courage to do that.
Everything was fine until the auto lights off automation in there. And that started actually once I put the humidity and temperature and motion sensors in there, I dropped the timeout of the motion down to 2 minutes, not 10. And that's when I started copying flack for the lights going out while the girlfriend was in the shower.
Yeah, well, that's a problem. I guess, you know, one way to detect if the shower's in use is with the humidity, but then it's going to be humid in the shower for a lot longer than when someone's actually been in the bathroom. So. Yeah, I think you're going to have a bit of fun playing with that.
And an old colleague of mine who happens to be a Home Assistant user as well and active in the community, Jürgen Weber, he suggested I have a look at the Trend component. So my latest implementation uses Trend to detect an increase in humidity within 2 minutes.
Nice. Yeah. You could probably also combine that with like a Bayesian sensor as well, sort of giving it more probability, you know, is someone in the bathroom right now or is the shower on?
Yeah, both of those would probably work well. So, yeah, that's a work in progress, but it's I think today we kind of – I did some more tweaking yesterday, and I think today we got to a state where we didn't have any lights out during showers, so that's always good news.
That's a good day then.
Yeah.
Are we exposed? This is what every security team is wondering. But with vulnerabilities scattered across network, cloud, AI, and OT silos, the truth is out of reach, and attackers know it. There's a better way. Unify to defy risk with Tenable AI-powered exposure management. Tenable brings together all your security data and exposures in one unified view, giving you the attacker's map and revealing the critical paths and weaknesses they can exploit. Now your teams can prioritize intelligently, move decisively, and collaborate without friction. Tenable turns scattered work into a single proactive force. Instead of chasing noise, your team knows where to focus, gaining clarity, control, and speed to reduce cyber risk with confidence. Learn more at Tenable.com. Tenable, your exposure ends here.
So can you tell me more about your RFID scanner, please? I'm really interested in this.
I really want to get a really nicely automated entry, exit, and room presence ultimately. So the first step in that was RFID. Basically, it's a ESP2866 microcontroller. It runs a RFID scanner and a buzzer in it. Like, the parts are a total of probably $12 or $13 from AliExpress.
Right.
And it's basically a jumper wire them together, no soldering required. They're all kind of just breakout boards with pins and everything already on them. Wired that up and wrote some Arduino C code. I'm a bit of a C coder from way back as well, so I don't mind pulling out a bit of C every now and again. If that's not your style, you could run CircuitPython or something like that on it and write it in Python. It sits on MQTT. On the other end of the MQTT, there is a little Python script I wrote that basically sits on top of an SQLite database and authenticates tokens. It receives an RFID read event from the scanner, looks in the database, that looks up the token mapped to a Home Assistant presence detection person.
Yep.
And just sends the MQTT event next onto Home Assistant to flag the next thing, which is that particular tag is home or not. Right. So the reason I did the separation there is because So, for instance, for me, I can use a little blue RFID token I carry on my keys. If I don't have that on me, I can use one of my credit cards, or I can use my New South Wales Opal transport card, because they all have compatible RFID in them.
Interesting.
And do you have the reader on the outside of your door to unlock the door, or is it something like once you're inside the house, you tap it to let Home Assistant know you're home?
I'm not comfortable with putting my front door lock anywhere near a network at the moment.
Fair enough.
I mean, admittedly, the locks that are on the door right now, they're not secure. Anyone with a little bit of skill can pick most modern locks anyway. So it's not a huge step, but it's still not something I'm entirely comfortable with. It's just inside the door. It basically acts as an alarm panel. Our RFID tokens arm and disarm the alarm primarily at the stage. The alarm is Home Assistant MQTT panel component. Basically all of the alarm function controls from MQTT.
Ah, nice.
That's really cool, actually.
Yeah.
So ultimately I'll replace that with, I'm playing with some Bluetooth tags at the moment, and I want to do full room detection with those. So if we're carrying one of those tags when we get home, it can swipe us in. Now, swiping us in also announces a welcome home or a welcome back if you're a guest profile, not a you know, me or my girlfriend. So it welcomes us home or says goodbye when we swipe out. If both of us have swiped out, it actually announces the alarm will be armed in 15 seconds and plays another tone. And that's all through the announcement TTS setup I've done based around MPD, nice. Music player daemon. Yeah.
Okay. So let's say I'm going to give you a scenario, because before I moved to Bluetooth, I actually started experimenting with NFC tags as a precursor to moving to RFID.
Yep.
And one of the things was, what if you and your girlfriend both get home at the same time? Do you both have to tap on like you would going on public transport? You both have to tap on to say you're home?
We both don't have to, but we both are in the habit of it, because if both of us leave, then it'll auto-arm, and if one of us gets home, it'll disarm. So
right,
it's best to keep that state fairly well managed. It's been a habit forming, to say the least, to get it to the point that it's reliable, making sure it, I'm bad for it too. Sometimes I'll be rushing out the door and I just won't swipe out, and I'll just log in from to Home Assistant from the bus and log myself out if I've done that. But Chelsea's probably not going to go that far.
Yeah, right. Because I think one of the problems with, for me at least, having an NFC or RFID tag to log out is if you forget to log out, your home is essentially unarmed, which I guess is the same of not putting in the PIN code before you go out.
Yeah.
Which is why I moved to sort of a mix and mash. So now I use Wi-Fi and Bluetooth with just our phones. And that way, if both of those are not home, then that person's not home. And if everyone's not home, then the security system can kick in and arm all the sensors and stuff like that.
Yeah. The problem I had with those setups was we often have a dead phone or
and
Chelsea's phone's a little bit out of date now and the battery's not as reliable as it could be, so it's likely to fall off the network at odd times. So I think we wanted to keep that manual, like we're swiping out now, swiping in. Feel to it for now. But I mean, that may change as I play with more of the Bluetooth ideas, and I'm looking at building my own ESP based Bluetooth room presence detection as a DIY project in the near future.
Oh, nice. And so tell me about your media player, Damon. How does that work?
Yeah, so as most of us have experienced with trying to get TTS type announcements out through our systems, we clobber other players or we clobber messages over the top of each other. And this is something I looked at multiple ways of solving for quite a while. So originally I had all my TTS. So all my TTS at the moment includes all my alarm announcements. It also includes, for instance, if the Rural Fire Service in New South Wales issues an alert within 100 kilometres of my house. I am in CBD Sydney, but 100 kilometres from there, there is, you know, bushfire areas. There's, you know, things to know about. Any major incidents will come out as a TTS, and my girlfriend's a bit of a geoscience nut, so any earthquake anywhere in the world gets announced if it's over a magnitude 4. Yeah, so that's the USGS feed and the geoscience AU feed being fed into that one, both with the GeoRSS component there for Home Assistant. So we have a fair bit of announcements. We also have a turn announcements on and off, house go to sleep, house wake up, overrides, which will just shut down all announcements or only allow criticals through, and a few other options around that. So that's all implemented at the moment. So taking a step back, we came from every time an announcement would happen, it would stop our Google Home from playing the music it was currently playing, go to the announcement, never resume the music again. That got annoying.
Yeah.
So I went to putting a little tiny speaker into my Nook and just playing direct audio out of that through using MPD as the player. I found that was the better. The only reason MPD is in the picture is to cue things better as a lightweight cue. So we didn't have announcements stomp on each other. It's still a dedicated player just for announcements. However, it is MPD is in that picture just to cue the next thing into there. It still uses the Google TTS component service from within Home Assistant to actually go and turn the text into an MP3. And then it passes that off to the MPD media player, just like the component would normally do to do a text-to-speech to an entity. The only reason I have a customization in there for that is to make the TTS component use the NQ option for the media player. So I have a custom version of that. The media player base component, which just forces that. Sorry, the TTS base component, which just forces that in queuing.
Right, and so that will only play through that little speaker on the Nook, is that right?
So the Nook actually controls the playback, and now to get the sound off the Nook, I've gone from that single speaker connected to it to going to the Amazon Echo. Sorry, I won't say the other word, which is just sitting near it. So that is primarily just used for TTS. I don't really, and you might find the same, Phil, in Australia. We don't have quite the Amazon presence to make the Amazon Echo devices quite as appealing as what they might be to an American or somebody in North America.
Yeah.
So we found that device to be pretty much useless by itself, and I'm happy with, as a Bluetooth speaker just connected to for TTS announcements. There's also a cheap little waterproof one for the bathroom, which does get Bluetooth in there as well if we want to have radio or Bluetooth announcements or the TTS announcements in the bathroom.
Okay, cool. So, basically nothing really changes from a config sort of stance. You just send off a text-to-speech announcement through Home Assistant, and then your custom component will then go ahead, put it up into a queue if it needs to be, and then deliver it out to the speakers.
Yeah, the only other little bit of smarts in there is when it detects, using Dbus, when it detects a Bluetooth connect and disconnect for an audio device, one of the two audio devices I use, it will actually enable and disable the MPD output associated with that. So MPD can do multiple outputs, and I have the three outputs, the local speaker and the two Bluetooth defined, and I can just toggle those on and off based on some Dbus events.
Oh, cool. Nice. Okay.
Yeah. And BlueWares is nice like that. It reports everything out to Dbus. And in fact, there's a BLE tracking component for Home Assistant that I want to rewrite to use Dbus to get that data instead of polling constantly and using as much load as it possibly can.
That's cool. Sounds like you've got this whole tech to speech thing down pat now.
Yeah, pretty happy with that solution. I've also added to that so it's currently still powered by a AppDaemon script. It doesn't need to be anymore. That was an early attempt to get enqueuing working. It kind of worked, but now I've gone back to MPD. I don't actually need that step in there, and I could move it back out to pure automation scripts.
Right.
And that's probably where I'll go next with it. But that also just adds, like, you know, there's a default tone that precedes every message, so it's just not like breaking silence into a message. You get the Star Trek communicator badge tone actually as default.
Nice.
Yeah, and I think for RFS there's a bit of a fire engine gong sound for it. You can, any of the events that call the script.announce, so everything on the entire automation that wants to make an announcement called script.announce with a bunch of parameters that includes whether it's critical, what tone you want to use, whether you need to flash the Shami gateway light a particular color when it happens. There's a bunch of options that can all be built around those announcements too.
Ah, that's cool. So do you use Node.js or AppDaemon, or do you just do everything in YAML?
So AppDaemon when I needed to for that early version of queuing, and that's the only reason there's still any AppDaemon left in the setup. I'll probably still use it for some other stuff. I love the idea of AppDaemon.
Yep.
But just about everything of mine is YAML, pure Home Assistant where possible.
Yeah. Nice.
I haven't not even played with Node-RED. I like the idea of it to get beginners in, but I think you guys have discussed plenty of times that, you know, if I've spent plenty of time in YAML. I'm an Ansible guy when it comes to automation, and I've used a written API documentation in pure YAML for months at a time, so I'm pretty comfortable using YAML for configuring Home Assistant.
That's cool.
Yeah, in fact, the new scary config components do scare me a little bit, but I think I'll get used to them. I just deleted my Chromecast configuration in favor of like hitting the enable integration button in the web interface, and that's all I had to do, and that just feels like it. I don't have full control over it anymore, but I'm sure it's good behind the scenes.
Yeah, it keeps everything consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in your GitHub repo, you've got a custom component for webhooks with Facebook. What's that all about?
Oh, yeah. So any of those TTS announcements go out to a Facebook Messenger that goes to my girlfriend and I.
Oh, okay. So we also send it to you on Facebook.
Yeah, so if we miss a house announcement or we're not home, we get all of the normal announcements plus alarm announcements on our Facebook. So the house has a page and the page owns the app, and yeah.
Why did you need to use a custom webhook for that, though? Because I have a similar thing, you know, if I'm at work and the front door opens while I'm not there, you know, I get a Facebook message, but I just use the standard Notify platform for that.
Oh, no, that one. Sorry, yeah, no, the custom component, that was me playing with inbound Facebook so we could activate conversation components like the microphone on the top of the Home Assistant web interface.
Right.
So we could do that back to the Facebook chat.
Interesting.
Yeah, that partially works.
Okay, so similar to which is something I wanted to do with my Facebook Messenger, is sort of create like a bot to talk with the home, you know, tell the bot, turn on the lights, and it will go out to Home Assistant and turn on the lights for you.
Exactly that, yeah. I mean, ultimately, I would have loved to have hacked the building intercom to trigger the main front door of the building and have a friend be able to send a Facebook message to the house, and if they're authenticated, have the front door open. That would have been amazing. I haven't been game to hack the building intercom yet.
Yes. Well, actually, I did see, I think there's something sold in the States that it's like a device that you stick onto the phone of our apartment or condo buildings. And when it detects, you know, an incoming person at your door, it will then intercept that, and then you can have it send back that special tone to unlock the apartment door downstairs.
Okay, that does sound interesting, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it now, but it was definitely sold in the States. It definitely wasn't here in Australia, so your mileage may vary if it will work.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Oh, my friend and I were actually trying to find a way to automate that just around, like, so he lives in a condo, and, he, you know, for him, it's that exact same problem, right? It's like, well, you know, I've got this, you know, I got to send a tone, I got to do all that. How can I just basically automate that based on who's coming, or even just straight open it?
Yeah. right? So actually, there's also a lot of other new apartment buildings allow you to receive a phone, like they will receive a phone call. So if you want the gate open, you just call a special phone number, like a mobile number, and it will unlock the gate for you. So if you have one of those, you could probably combine that with something like Trello or one of those voice calling services where you would just give it a number to call and then wait for the, and just call that number and then the gate would open. So there might be another option if you've in one of those apartment buildings and you have a phone number you can call to unlock the gate. That might be an option for you.
Yeah, yeah. And well, one of the things we've looked at using is to change his phone number that's in the system to essentially one of like a router or a server with a SIM card in it or something like that, and actually send over the tone. Just we've tried to do a whole bunch of things with this. It's and then you know, laziness kind of kicks in halfway through. We've like architected this to like every account for every little possibility of, okay, what happens if blah 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 happens, and it's like, all right, yeah, this is too much work. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, way too much work. Hey, Jared, also in your GitHub repo, I saw you have like a fish tank. How have you automated your fish?
So that's very much a work in progress. At the moment, it is temperature inside the tank and the lamp on top of the tank. I do have a pH sensor and equipment and all the bits and pieces I need. I just haven't had time to fully play with it and get it set up. But I want to do water quality, temperature. The temperature will set alarms off with the rest of the house alarm automations when temperatures vary outside of the range for the tropical fish in the tank.
Nice.
And ultimately, I want to do automated feeding as well. There's a couple of options I've looked at for that. One of them would involve 3D printing a bunch of parts and a servo. Another one would be getting an off-the-shelf electronic fish feeder and hacking the control buttons on it to be controlled by something else.
That's cool. Mm.
Yeah. So that's the ultimate plans for that. But at the moment, it just runs, the MCU runs the temperature. It also runs a room humidity and pressure, but it's not fish tank related strictly, and it runs the light on top of the tank.
Nice.
And the light on top of the tank was actually the very first thing we ever automated once we got the Google Home, because it was a case of having a way to control it when we were away. And it was originally just using the TP-Link app remotely via the cloud before I built separate networks to lock all of these devices off the cloud.
So if you've got all your devices locked off the cloud, how do they, do any of the devices need the cloud?
Yes, I have a couple that do. So Broadlink SP3 switches, they shut down their Wi-Fi, I found, if they don't get a DNS response for about a day.
Oh,
right. So I give them a fake DNS response and they're happy.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people, you know, they're always like, oh, just put all your home automation stuff on its own network. But there's some things, you know, for example, your Sonos speakers, you know, can't run on their own network because they need to access Spotify or any other music service from outside the network. Mm-hmm. You know, like your Roku, you can't have that on its own network that's isolated because it needs to stream things. So
the benefit of running Home Assistant on my gateway is that it actually sits across all three VLANs.
Ah, interesting.
And Home Assistant is the only thing that does sit across all three VLANs in my house.
Right, so it has access to everything, but, everything else is segregated. That makes sense.
So the Amazon Echo and the Google Home both sit on a network that does have internet access, obviously, as does the IPTV set-top box.
Yep.
And other entertainment things that suck down YouTube, basically. They all sit on a network that has internet access, but there's absolutely no reason a light bulb or a power switch needs internet access.
No, yeah, absolutely. So I have to give a shout out to you, Jared. You created the a custom component for Internode, which is an ISP down here in Australia, yeah. Which I am a customer
How's
of.
How's that going?
It's been really good. I haven't done too much. So basically what your custom component does, if there's another random Internode customer out there that's listening, your component will go out and fetch the usage. I don't know if it's like an Australian thing. I have this feeling that like North America just gets unlimited internet, but out here we get sucked with, you know, caps and data usage limits. And
yeah.
But, so your component allows me to just keep an eye on how much I've used for my monthly quota. And now Home Assistant can tell, you know, if I've used more than 80%, it can, you know, slow down, you know, some background tasks, and it can not do other things. So I haven't done too much with it at the moment, apart from, I believe, if the sensor ever reaches above 85%, all my containers like transmission or any of my like background tasks will just shut down.
And then send you notifications everywhere saying, hey, you're running out of data.
Exactly, yeah. Yep. So, you know, hey, you're at 90%, like now's the time I'm going to start restricting your Netflix access if you don't stop using it so much. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I remember you made the call out to see, or I think you asked about an Internode plugin for it on the podcast, I think back in episode 20-something, like early 20s or some point.
There you go.
I think I reached out to you long after that, yeah.
Exactly. So I have been very happy with that. So thank you for providing that and sharing it with everyone in your GitHub, which we'll leave links to.
I will spend the time and make it worthy of being a core component at some point soon. But, yeah, it has been a busy time lately for me, so lots of fun. But keeping me busy, yeah.
Well, thank you very much for making the time to come on the podcast today and telling us all about the cool stuff with your Home Assistant. We will definitely leave links to all your repos that people can check out. I would highly recommend it. Thank you very much.
And they can all find me on the Discord as well. Happy to talk to anybody more about any of the things tonight. Just reach out. As my girlfriend will tell you, I'm more than happy to talk to anyone about my home automation.
Aren't we all? That's why we're here.
I'd like to thank you guys too. I love the podcast. It makes my week or fortnight, whatever it is now. Whenever it comes out, I jump on it. And it's kind of my it's the thing now that prompts me to go and check the blog and update and things like that. Otherwise, I just get complacent. So, thank you guys.
No, you're welcome. Thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you so much.
Cheers.